The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin, and Bill Krakenberger, at Bill Crackman with the K on Twitter. The name of the podcast is Wisecracks. Before we get back to Bill, let me read a couple tweets here. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Jesse Welch. Hey, Gilly, you got any bets for the upcoming NFL draft culmination? Asking for a friend. Combination is what I call it. Charlie D, USA number one. Crackman button hook reception from Montana. Cash is never in doubt. Rich PSM, I would honestly pay to see a walkover happen. Please keep the drum beating, guys. Also planning to go see Raphael next week. He rode to fame when I met my wife. We must say goodbye. You going to the Rafa Nadal exhibition here with Carlos Alcaraz next week?
I knew that was a thing.
Or this weekend.
Totally, yeah.
You didn't know.
I remember you and Matt talking about this like a year ago. That's finally this weekend?
Yeah, they're wedging it in before they go to Indian Wells, before they go to play that tournament.
Where are they playing it at?
I think MGM. I don't know. I have to check. I didn't get a
ticket. It's got to be somewhere like goofy that they can have an audience.
Yeah, it's on the Strip. It's on the Strip. I think it's MGM.
Okay.
And then this one's for you, Billy. Dan Yarosh, hope I'm pronouncing that all right. Hey, Bill, was wondering what a typical sports betting morning is for you. With so many things to place a wager on, how do you determine what sport to start looking at first? Do you have a meeting with your advisors and then determine what to look at for the day?
Yeah, like this morning, very good question. Like this morning, you look, and this is a big college basketball day. Thursday's a ton of games, extra games, regular games. So, actually, we put a sign. I have two different guys I use. They assign a point spread to every game even before the lines come up overnight. So we know, like, I'll just use a top game on the board. And by the way, this is not a real play. This is just talking about Ohio State. It opened up at 1 and 143. So we'll assign that game and say, no, you know what? That game really should be 3. Well, that's a play because it's the keyest numbers in college basketball, by the way. 1, 2, and 3, especially 2 and 3. That's the keyest numbers in college basketball. Matter of fact, to be blunt, guys, I buy onto 2 and 3 all the time because it's worth more than the 10 cents. And if they're charging you more than 10, then obviously you don't want to play. Listen, Circa and Westgate, they both know what's up. So they charge more than 10 cents. They charge 15 cents, I believe, on the 2 and 3 on college basketball. So, and what that means, guys, is if I'm betting something minus 3.5, I'm going to bet it minus 3, minus 20. If I'm betting something plus 2.5, I'm going to bet it plus 3, minus 20. So 2 or 3, I buy onto the whole number. So anyway, going back to what I said.
Is that because of fouling at the end, generally?
You know what? It is because of fouling at the end on the 3 more than anything. But it's actually just I learned that from the Pinnacle guys in the 90s.
Yeah.
I've learned it from Alan Boston. These guys are the guys, the true guys that are the geniuses.
I'm going to tell you, though, college basketball has changed this year with fouling at the end.
Yeah.
These teams are not as willing to foul in the way that they used to.
Yeah, no, and college basketball on whole is a very, very tough sport to beat, unlike years previous where I've hit, like, ridiculous, 63%, 60% for the season. Every single syndicate group I know this year is struggling to win. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Other reasons too, maybe that's one of the reasons. So it's you know, why other things are doing great. NBA props are doing ridiculous, and college football was great. Even NFL was great to me this year. College basketball is a harder sport to beat this year than ever.
It doesn't behave the same way it has. It's been brewing, but this year, like, you really see it starkly. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
But even last night, like, we had Rice under first half, under 66.5. I bet it at Circa. Matter of fact, I bet it at every single sports book in town. So even last night, hearing something in the media that we're going to slow the pace down, and sure enough, they were taking like 25 seconds every time to shoot the ball. I was hesitant to bet the normal amount that I would bet. I'd have no problem betting on a college basketball total, a large amount of money. Matter of fact, let me be blunt, as much as I can get down on a college basketball total. This year, I was even hesitant where I could have went back and bet the South Point. So the South Point, I bet under 66.5, under 66, they didn't move it. I bet under 66 again, and they didn't move it. And I was like, why? I'm going to bet it again. I said, you know what? I have enough. I never would talk that way in the past. I have enough. Because there were 65 here. I said, you know what? I have enough. I had a good amount of money on it. And anyway, so that's the kind of year it's been. But so we'll go back to what I'm saying. The Ohio State-Nebraska game. Let's say we had our handicapper had it at 3. It was 1. We knew that was going to be a play tomorrow. So that's circled as a play. Now we take the risk overnight, though. And this happens. You lose the game. In other words, you lose that number on the game, and it's just not a play anymore because overnight I can't get down enough. Now, you have to remember now, during college basketball, there's 4 of us splitting the money. So there's 4 guys that I actually get percentages to, including the originator. So overnight, what can I get down? $5,000? $6,000? I mean, you can't get a lot down. It's like a dime each, you know, whatever. Whereas full day of game right now, you could, on a side, on a college basketball side, you can almost name your number I can get down. So on a college basketball side. So wake up this morning, the line's 3.5. Done. It's not a play no more. So that is something overnight, sides and totals, mostly totals. We mostly bet totals. The totals are a more beatable market than the sides. So every single game is assigned a total. Before the line even comes up, we match that with the 2 different sources that I have. And we know we're going to bet them a certain time of the day. It's tough in Vegas too because the sports books don't open until 8 a.m. A lot of them. The lines don't come up on a weekday like today, but sometimes we'll even go ahead of time if there is enough market. And that's that is a great question. I don't think it's ever been asked. So whoever asked that, thank you. That's a fantastic question.
Yeah, we've talked about your process before, and to the extent that you're willing to discuss it, it's. Sure. It is, you know, and for those who land on the show for the first time, maybe we should always reset it with you, you are not the originator.
No.
Yeah. What was the first time
I can't name 10 players in college basketball. But then again, I don't have to. Like, so when we did the Showtime show, I said that about the NFL, 15 players. But, of course, now doing the Fox NFL show, I have to be more schooled on everything, which, of course, I am. But
our Billy's growing up.
Yeah. So, no, of course, like, people were saying, what do you mean? How would I trust you? How would I trust – that's not what it's not about me. It's about knowing the connections I have made in 30 years and being around the sharpest sports betting guys of all time, sports betting syndicate groups and players. And, you know,
it's just a different skill set, and it's a required skill set. The first time I ever met you, I don't know if you remember this. We watched the Pittsburgh Steelers game at Piero's, and you said to me, Gil, the only person I know on the Steelers is Big Ben. And then you pause and you go, he does play for the Steelers, right? So that was the first
time. I might have been fooling around then, but still. And I probably that night, just like now, and people say to me, that's crazy. You don't know. I probably had, you know, 20 props, 15, 10 props on a primetime game, and probably that many, and didn't know what I was rooting for. You know, I know 1 or 2 that I have the most money on or something that I got double or triple down on. But it's a business. You're at the end of the game, it's W's and L's.
But this point about college basketball that I was making earlier needs to sort of we shouldn't really gloss over that because it gets to a wider discussion about when do you realize that because none of this works forever, right? How long does it take for you to capitulate and say, okay, this ain't what it used to be. I need to ratchet it back. Is it a full season? Yeah. Is it a month? Is it a half a season where you're like, okay, maybe I need to ratchet this back, or maybe I need to pause entirely? I don't know how that works for you.
Yeah. You know, you have to evolve. You have to make sure you're what you're doing is not something that was based off of your numbers last year or 2 years ago. And like, I just seen Alan Boston when I was up in Connecticut. And he told me he's doing all right. He's not losing. He's having a decent season. He's doing okay. He's nothing crazy, but and he does it old fashioned pen and paper, notebooks, spiral notebooks.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing. He's one of the greatest guys with overnight lines. Like literally, he's there in Connecticut, and you know, the DraftKings, he'll hit that market first. And everything goes his favor. 95% of the games he bets the next day, by the time the game tips off, he will have the best on the line.
In the NFL season, what does your week look like?
NFL season. NFL is a little bit different because Sunday night, the lines come up Sunday a week before. People don't realize that. The lines come up a week before the games start. So Sunday night, we're actually looking into things, and occasionally we'll go on a Sunday night. I told you this year there was a like the Buffalo Bills game came up, and it was a Sunday night, and I was getting down overnight. And I told my buddy back east, I said, listen, you should get down on this Bills game. It's going to be terrible weather. And sure enough, it moved. Like, that's the game they got moved. Remember, they moved locations. Yep. It lost, by the way. That can happen. Doesn't matter. You get 6, 7 points, 8 points, the best of it. It loses. I had the NBA All-Star game. I got 12 points, the best of it, a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
I lost. Like, it just.
Did you play that at all, Kelly? Did you play the total in that NBA All-Star game? I was gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean,
it happens.
Around.
Yeah. It's no big deal. I mean, you get the best of it in the end, you're going to win. Of course, I win in the end. So
it was amazing. Adam Silver wanting, you know, was like, oh, we want a competitive game, all this, right? Everybody's. That's
the reason why we played it.
The under money comes rushing in. It's like 13 points lower than it was.
I could have got a 12-point middle.
I don't know, 10 minutes, you're like, oh, this it's over.
The first quarter, they scored 100
it's
points.
It's over.
I think 101. You know, it's no bad. Listen, I turned it off, and, you know, I really don't watch much NBA anyway.
Well, we could watch that All-Star game. I mean,
Adam Silver, Larry Bird, right? I think Larry Bird was the other one that, like, said something about what wanted to see more effort out of these guys. And everybody was like, well, Larry Bird said it. They're clearly going to step up.
Yeah.
Can't get these guys to play hard in that game.
That game's done. I think there's ways to save the dunk contest. I'm done talking about saving the All-Star game.
I don't know if there's ways to save the dunk contest either, because we've seen it all. We've seen it all. It's the NBA All-Star game is the worst of the All-Star game. Well, I know the Pro Bowl is pretty bad, too.
They're all so bad. They're all bad.
The baseball one's not bad.
I can't watch more than 20 minutes of any sports All-Star.
Oh,
the flag football one.
I won't either. I'm absolutely not watching a second of the NBA or NFL.
Me either. I don't watch NBA.
No way. We'll come back. Richard Lewis, Craig, wants to answer another question about a tweet of his. Sour Rooters on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, Kelly Bidlin.
Bill talks about what Gil talked about yesterday. MLB win totals.
Bill does a good job of talking about it.
It's good MLB win total stuff. If you missed it yesterday on the show, catch it now.
It's a dork fest is what it was. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. We get tweets. Gil Kelly and Bill Krakenberger Unscripted. We get tweets at Beating the Book. The Numbers Guy says, it's been a couple weeks, but Bill and Gil together again on ANG. All is right with the world. Thank you, The Numbers Guys. Thanks. Montreal Max, Bill is so right, as in my 20s, betting in the 80s, I knew all the players. And in the mid-90s, when starting to book offshore, all my focus was on teams and their betting trends and only caring about what side was going to move the line during the day. We like Montreal Max. Rick Ollier. Hey, guys. Happy New Year's. The question is for Bill. Bill, who was the more impressive person that you met? Oh, this is great. Joe Montana or the Flipper? Thanks. #, let's ride.
Not even close, the Flipper.
The Flipper.
Yeah, it's not even.
Can we refresh everybody's memory?
Yeah, sure. No, yeah. Not even close. Matter of fact, the Flipper's son, Seth, was just here hanging out with me a couple weeks ago. I should have brought him by. He was talking about some stories about his dad.
The Flipper was one of the greatest things ever.
Yeah, no, the Flipper was the greatest coin flipper that I've ever known. As he got older, it was harder and harder to get someone to flip him because everyone knew of him.
His talent was, to be specific, that he could.
He could flip a coin. He could have you flip a coin, or he could flip a coin and call heads or tails. I mean, he was the greatest at that ever. But as he got older, he couldn't do it at nighttime. So he had to be under a light. Like, this would be a perfect scenario, setting here with these lights. Or he had to be outside or daytime.
Perfect flipping conditions.
Yes, perfect flipping conditions.
Kelly, you got to have perfect flipping conditions.
And the Flipper had hands of butter. His hands were
I forgot about this part. Yeah.
No, I couldn't believe it. Like, he's like, finally, at like 70-something years old, he goes, all right, crack, feel my hand. I said, what? Feel my hands. Like, oh, my God.
What are you talking about? His hands were milky white.
They were like they were like butter. I was like, that's impossible. So I'll just tell you, he was telling me basically he can feel every single head or tail, you know what I mean, on that hand. If it goes down like that, I mean, obviously. But
wait, was he calling it midair?
This guy was calling a lot of things. But this was certain things he would do. What I'm talking about is he would take your quarters, by the way, you'd bring in the quarters. He wouldn't want to touch them until he did it. And he would bring four quarters. You'd flip one. He'd have three in his hand. He'd shake the three in his hand, and he'd have you flip one up in the air, and all four quarters would be the same. you know, heads or tails. And
is the flipper still with us?
No.
No.
The flipper passed. There was a long time. I didn't talk to him or anything. He did pass. I've watched him win things from, you know, nothing to putting up a can of Coke versus a brand new Cadillac. He wanted to win the Coke, the can of Coke. He was the best coin flipper of all times, and people do know who he is. There's stories about him. There's some stories on the internet about him, and yeah, he was just a. I remember one time at the first time I ever seen him was in a pool hall in Elizabeth, New Jersey, at a third. You know, pool players love to. Let me just be blunt. Pool players will gamble on anything, and it was a big tournament. And I remember Steve Mizorak was there. He was a big pool player back then.
Even when you're just showing off. Remember that Miller Lite commercial?
Yes, yes.
Mizorak.
That's right. Steve Mizorak. There you go.
Right.
Even when you're just showing off.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So I remember that's the first time I see him, and he won like $8,000 that night off the guys. I mean, it was just amazing. But he's won all around the country, did a lot of those, you know, great flipping things. Got himself in some – there was a racetrack in New York, which I forget. It was I don't really go to trotter tracks. It was a Roosevelt. It was called Roosevelt Racetrack. And I remember one night he was in Roosevelt Racetrack, and literally they got him outside in the parking lot after he beat people in the racetrack. He was surrounded in the parking lot, and he had to give the money back. So he told me these great stories.
Man.
And anyway, so yeah, the
flipper way over Joe Montana.
Yeah.
In these parts.
Yep.
All right, this is from Michael Burns. He's cueing us in on this. This will lead into your next one here. Richard Munchkin, the great Richard Munchkin,
great guy.
Tweeting about security experts says slot advantage play costing casino industry tens of millions nationwide. That is followed up by a tweet from Dan Wood, who says, I met Crack at the Hard Rock, as I am a regular there, actually laughed out loud when I saw his post yesterday. I know that lady and loved that you caught her doing that. We call them hawks. Hope to see Crack again. Great guy.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that.
Perfect entree.
Yeah, I didn't see the Richard Munchkin thing. I'm dying to read that now because he says the security aspect has a slot advantage play costing the industry tens of millions.
All right, let's
okay.
Refresh for everybody what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You call them sour rooters.
Yeah, it's just it's a term I made up. They're sour at everything in their lives, and they're rooting against you. So I call them sour rooters. So I've done the one video I did at first in Atlantic City in 2021, got a couple hundred thousand views. Then I did one at Caesar's Palace here that got 2.7 million views. It was kind of just showing what you're looking for. And then I'm in Atlantic City this past week, a week ago, and this lady just wouldn't leave me alone. Wherever I was playing the Advantage machines, she was there behind me. So I said, I'm making a video of her. Rooting, you know, she's
rooting for you to
rooting
disappear.
Rooting for me to lose.
But
you would think that she would know after the third or fourth machine, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving until I'm done. I'll pull the bank route and show him once in a while. Hey, see money?
Right. No. But for the uninitiated here, what I'm saying is,
let me explain to people.
Yeah, explain.
I want to explain to people because even though this one I put up the other day got 385,000 views, people were asking, so I wanted to explain what it is. So now there's certain Advantage machines in the casino, and I'm looking at some right here across from us here.
Let's show your video while you're talking. While you're talking.
Sure.
Here. Yeah.
And so there's certain machines like that Wheel of Fortune machine, which has a certain number you're supposed to play it at. There's a number based on other people playing. They built up bonuses. You could see on that particular one, the higher those arrows get to the bonus, and every once in a while an arrow will come up and make it bigger. So when it gets to 10, you get the bonus. So when 8 or 9 or 7 or 6 of these, depending on how many rows of these Advantage things come up, as you can see there, it's close to the top, you're supposed to play. Based on other people losing, they just walk off, and they're basically getting up when they should be sitting down, and I'm sitting down when they should be, you know, when they should be sitting down. So
This has become a scourge here in the desert.
I'll tell you what, it's worse in Atlantic City and Foxwoods.
Right? Really?
Yes.
Wow.
There's slot hustlers everywhere. So basically, you're playing a game based off other people losing and or just leaving. Maybe they hit something and left and they won, but the bonus did not get hit. So people behind you, they're gonna want to get on the games. But the difference between me and them is, people were saying, "Well, aren't you a sour rooter?" No, I don't stand behind someone hoping they lose and wait till they get off the game hawking them. I'll walk around the casino, and if someone left the bonus on, I'll play it. But I don't do it full time like these people. They actually stand behind you, and they have these little things they do, like blowing smoke on your machine, getting around you, maybe intimidating you. It's a real thing.
Okay, so. But here's what I want to know. Can't casinos be better at scurrying these folks along?
MGM Mirage Corporation, at the time, you know, a year ago, went around and started throwing them out of the casinos because they know they're not really worth much to the casino. They're only winning. They're only taking the wins off other people's loss, who, you know, who are going to lose anyway. And, you know, they're leaving with the money and not putting it back. And their real true core customers aren't winning, you know, which they're going to come back more and more. So they're not the customers you want. But the casinos, there's laws now. You got to be careful. We're in 2024. You can't say something to anybody, and they'll turn it around on you and say you're being racist, you're being, you know what I mean? They could sue the casinos, which the casinos don't want. Basically, the casinos don't say anything. You do what you want, and you can, but the casinos really should. To be honest with you, the casinos really should, because they're taking the money out of the pure gambler's pockets by standing behind you and intimidating and even, you know, like I said, doing those mechanisms.
Isn't the first layer of this, though, that while casinos have the eye on the sky on a blackjack table 24/7, that slots really haven't been a priority for that.
Absolutely.
That's the first layer.
100% right.
Yeah.
There's no one with those little – you could look on YouTube. There was a lot of cheating devices at machines. They had little wands with a light at the end. You could put – you know, back when there was coins, and you could force the machine to, you know, get extra coins. Or even when I first started hustling machines 30 years ago, there was overpayers. And what that means is if you – press a button and you're supposed to get 100 coins out of the machine, ching, 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 ching. It would, you know, the slot would get looser where the coins came through. There was some machines back in Atlantic City, you get 105 coins, 5%. You know what I mean? Like, you know, 5 more extra coins out of the machine. But listen, now I think about that, that might have been considered cheating. Let me tell you, finding a slot voucher on the floor, I talked about. Finding a slot voucher on the floor is my last tweet. You have to be careful. You can't find... You know, people go to the machines and they find 35 cents, 40 cents. The casinos will throw you out. You're laughing. Kelly must do this every day.
No, he doesn't. Kelly and I know somebody.
They will throw you out of the casino. Better yet, you may get trespassed if you are taking them consistently from the change machines. People leave them. If the casinos don't cash the coins out because the casinos say, you know, there's a coin shortage, do not take those slot machine vouchers because you will be banned, Kelly Biden.
No, it wasn't Kelly. Kelly and I happen to know somebody we cautioned against doing that.
No, you can't do it. Yeah. I'm telling you, they'll throw you out of the casino.
Who, for his entire time doing it, could not have been possibly treated any better by the casinos. Let's just put it that way. Let's just put it that way.
There's no street smarts there.
We're coming back. Numbers Game, exclusively with Bill Krakenberger, unscripted next.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus our upcoming March Madness betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember to use promo code ANG.
ANG as an A numbers game.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. You fake me out, man. Don't appreciate it. Let me just read this one.
I couldn't fake you out yesterday with the easel. The easel, you were just sitting there with the phone waiting on me.
When you have an easel, when you work off an easel, Kelly, you're concentrating on the easel.
That's right.
Everybody knows that. This is from Johnny Ringo. I believe it's from Johnny Ringo. Yes, Johnny Ringo. If there isn't a 30 for 30 on the flipper, the world is being done a disservice.
Let me tell you something. That would really be really interesting how this guy won tens of millions from the 70s, early 70s on, you know, flipping coins. That would be a really good one. Listen, the one on Jimmy the Greek, I love that one too.
Oh, that's great.
I love that one, and I think that would be along the lines of that. I mean, the guy, in the end, I didn't tell them people this part. In the end, just like Jimmy the Greek, Flipper had a little bit of a problem. He was a big horse racing degen. He loved betting horse racing. So he would take the money he made advantageously gambling and blow it somewhere else. You know what? I got to tell you something. This will be shocking to know probably for people. There are some of the sharpest of the sharps that are specialized in a certain sport, and they beat it every year, but yet give it back or give back a large percentage in another sport. So they have leaks somewhere else.
Yeah. It's like the poker players come over and lose it all in the sports book.
That's the greatest analogy. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
They blow it in the sports book or on roulette. There was like a player that won $1 million one time at the Bellagio, went outside and blew the whole million playing roulette in 2 days.
Because I don't know if you know this, Bill. Poker players, they're the best at everything.
Yes. Yes.
As we could tell from certain person, Survivor.
I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah, hope so. Bit off topic, but Richard Lewis passed away, 76 years old, of a heart attack. Had been suffering from Parkinson's disease, but by all reports was doing well, but passed away from a heart attack. Obviously, this generation knows him best as one of the key players on Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, but a comic for years and years before that, neurotic beyond belief.
A great stand-up comic.
Great stand-up comic. I met him. I've lived a few lives. I met him. I did a show. I always call my Johnny Unitas San Diego Chargers year in radio in San Francisco. I was did mornings at a country music station. Don't ask. It was me. It was a Jewish guy, a black guy, a gay guy, and then a girl on a country music station in San Francisco. Go figure it out.
Sounds like shows that are on now.
It lasted a year. So, but we had the beauty of doing radio in San Francisco is that it is such a comedy hub. Like, Chappelle loved doing shows in the Bay Area. He used it as a testing ground. So word would get around unannounced about a Chappelle show. Like, I saw him, remember, like, Dane Cook was trying to set the comedy record for longest show. I would go to a Chappelle show at midnight. Swear to God, this happened one time. 6:30 in the morning, I'm still there. The Skins are about to play the Lions, and I'm like, we got to go. But like he was like, I'm not. My point here is not to make you laugh, it's to break you. You know, so in that Chappelle voice. Saw him at the comedy, at the Punchline. Was it Punchline or Cobb's? Where he, you know, Chris Tucker opened for Chappelle, and I was sitting next to Al Gore. Like, it was like comedy gold back then. And on the radio show, we used to have everybody come in. So Jeff Garlin, Susie Essler. Susie Essman, is it Essler or Essman from Curb? They came in. Susie did this thing where she cursed at me off air, and then we just bleeped out the curse words. Gil, you four-eyed. Susie Essman. She was wonderful. So nice in real life. Bobby Lee would come on. Bobby Lee. Comics are the best interviewees because they are tortured souls. And like Bobby Lee, who had been on Mad TV, was saying he couldn't remember 4 years of his life when he was on. David Alan Greer. I think I told that story when I was on air where I was late to sort of prep for him, and so I did my research via Wikipedia, and it was all nonsense. So it like became,
oh,
I was like,
no.
I'm here, you're doing a Farrakhan musical. And
I don't
he's like,
think
dying.
I've heard this story. That's,
yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
I hear you're doing a Farrakhan
that's
musical.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But Richard Lewis came on, and all I remember from Richard Lewis is I couldn't, at that age, I couldn't handle the dude. He ends up like a bee. He was so neurotic in real life. He was exactly how he was in real life as he was as you see him, as you saw him on TV and on his stand-up. So neurotic, he ends up behind you, like, you know, you're talking to him with the mics in front of you, just all over the place. But what a talent. What an unbelievable talent. And Twitter was, filled with tributes. Like, everybody running clips of him yesterday. One funny scene after another. So Richard Lewis passing away at the age of 76. But from a golden age of comedy that... in some tangential way, I was thrilled to be a part of as we were able to talk to all those guys. Are you a fan of Curb?
Yeah, of course. How can you not be? That was just a funny situational comedy. It's, you know, like Seinfeld, but people even like it better than Seinfeld.
Some people don't like this last season, though. Some people are saying it's a little too forced for them.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but yeah. The first, like, you know, 10 years was great stuff.
Oh, it's
8 years, whatever it was.
I haven't watched any of the new season yet, but I've heard that same thing.
Yeah.
I like them to build up, you know, because I don't remember these things otherwise.
Right.
Like, I'll remember it like once a month that the show's going on.
You guys like go back and watch the entire thing once in a while. Like I do that with The Sopranos once a year. I'll watch every season.
I'm doing it with Curb right now.
With
I'm in season five.
You'll do that.
Yeah.
There was a couple shows that I like. There's a show I'd like to do it. It's just too long. I thought it was fantastic. Homeland. I would like to see Homeland again.
Homeland
was just too long. It was so good.
Homeland was one of those shows where the first couple seasons were better than the end, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the first couple seasons.
Like, I remember quitting, like, in season three or season four, because exactly what Gil said. The first two were, like, amazing. I remember thinking it was incredible, and then I was like, what am I watching? Yeah.
Like, I feel that way about a lot of shows. Like, Succession, Goulet and I had this argument. Goulet thinks it's, like, this great job. I was like, hey, after the first year, I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, it's the same thing. Oh, let me guess, a really tremendously wealthy family talks unnaturally to each other. That's awesome.
I was that guy who I'm wondering how many shows like that where I watch every episode and I'm like, wait, really? Like the show's so silly, and then I fire up another episode. You're like, this is so stupid. Why am I watching this?
During football, even basketball now, I can't watch any shows. I'm sure this is stuff that you probably watch during the baseball season. So I'll do that in the summertime. I'll watch, even though I do love baseball, I will watch I watch Sopranos every single year.
Uh-huh.
Or I even like Entourage. It gives you a pump up. I watched the beginning to the end. But I've heard of that show Succession, never seen it. Breaking Bad I want to watch again, too. I liked it. I thought it was great.
Breaking Bad I have watched twice. You know what show is my favorite of all time that is so heavy that you can't watch it a second time is The Wire.
Never seen it.
It's
too heavy to watch
a second
heavy. Time.
I never seen it. I was told to see it.
This is the greatest thing ever.
Wow.
Greatest thing ever.
The Wire is the one.
So if you guys had to put any kind of shows in your top one or two, would The Wire be it?
The Wire for me would be number one.
Wow. Now I got to see it because you're like the third person that told me.
I'm not that guy.
Well,
I'm the guy who doesn't think it's all that great.
Oh. Well, here's the thing. I grew up in that area, so there's a little bit of regional.
It's based on Washington, D.C.?
Baltimore. Right. So there's a little bit of regional recognition, some of the things that people like. And I won't go in because it's a curse word, but there's certain things you recognize.
Right.
There's certain behaviors. But the beauty of The Wire was it was five seasons, and the guy who wrote it, Simon is his last name, used to be a cop in Baltimore and also was in the press, I believe. So he had an intimate knowledge of the authenticity of it
all. But then you wouldn't watch it again.
No, because it's so, season one and season four of The Wire, there were five seasons, and he planned them all out in advance. Like, season one was, a certain type of drug trade. Season two was the doc. Season four was in the schools. Season four in the schools, you forget you're watching a show.
Wow.
And I know guys who I grew up with who ended up teaching in the Baltimore County school system, and they used to describe this to me. So to watch it so done so authentically, it really, hit home.
All right, I'll have to see that.
Yeah, it's
incredible. Just was wondering, if there was those I seen a show called The Corner. Did you see that
based on
Baltimore?
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. It was 10 episodes. But The Wire was, I heard The Wire was similar to that. So, and I like The Corner. So I'm going to have to see it.
You know what other comic rolled in there back in the day in San Francisco, Kelly, was the great Norm MacDonald, who, of all jokes, so one of the ones he told, of course, was he said, studies show that that women find men more attractive when they grow facial hair.
Right.
So says the Bob Seger Institute. By the way, Derek Stevens might be, what do you think Derek Stevens has $1 billion. We have no idea how much money Derek Stevens has. But if he has $1 billion, he owes Bob Seger $500 million of it. Because Seger is on here all day long, his entire catalog.
REM too.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's Bob Seger songs?
Oh, my God.
The one guy I wish I would. I've seen so many concerts. He had his retirement concert here in Las Vegas, and I missed it. So Bob Seger retired, and he had his retirement concert 2 years ago. It's one guy. But however, I could just sit here and listen to it and have my own
there
little
you go.
Concert.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Still the same coming up after, coming up after the break. We wrap things up with the Crackman. Bill Krakenberg. You can follow him on Twitter at Bill Krakman with the K. And the name of the podcast is Wisecracks, which he does with John Orlando. We're coming back. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5, get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets. If your first bet loses, download the app and use promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Once again, I'm on Bali Nets is a big dog today in tennis and on Sasha Vickery, but the Vickery price is too high now based on the price that I got. Kelly, what are your basketball plays again?
Magic and Hawks. Magic, Hawks, and Suns.
We get tweets at Beatty the Book. Great feedback. Always appreciate it. Trust the glove. We call him Flipper. Faster than lightning, no one could be smarter than he. Chorus. Evan Klein. Ironic that last week's episode about on Curb was about Richard putting Larry in his will. Yeah, that's tough. Mr. Postman 619, the same guy that wrote The Wire wrote The Corner. I've rewatched. I've rewatched The Wire three times.
I like The Wire.
Gets better.
I mean, the corner.
Gets
sorry.
Better every time. Stephen Vegas is a huge fan of The Wire. The Corner is often referred to as a prequel. Oh, I didn't know that. To The Wire, even though there's no direct ties between the two, you guys also have to watch We Own the City because of how many actors from The Wire are in it and its similar content. That was also the case with Tremé. That David Simon wrote, which is about New Orleans and the jazz culture. Chance Copperpot, David Simon and Edward Burns both did The Wire and The Corner. If you like one, you'll like the other. Corner was almost as good as The Wire. Miniseries versus series. Wow.
Oh, now you got to see it.
Wow.
It was so good. I watched it like three times.
Wow.
The Corner was good.
Okay. We talk about your podcast. It's called Wisecracks.
Yeah. Yep. And
you got a great guest coming up.
I do. And I'll tell you why I reached out to him. I. Nelson Rose, who's like the premier, you know, he's a leading expert in gambling law, consultant, frequency guest for the government industries. He's the greatest gaming guy that I know. And the questions, I'm going to have a bunch of questions for him. Matter of fact, I'm going to actually ask the public, too, for some questions. Because when I emailed him, he said, if you have some prepared questions for me, that would be great. So I'm going to see if the public has some, you know, tax law or any gaming law questions.
Did you tell him that these are not billable hours? He does not get to bill you?
Yeah, no. I actually emailed him, and I was surprised he emailed me back. He actually knew who I was. So that was good. I was happy about that. Because, yes, he definitely charges for his time.
Why do attorneys get to do that and nobody else in the world does? sorry, attorneys, but really, it's a little much. Like doctors call you to, like, you consult with a doctor. They don't even think about billing you for the extra time. But lawyers, oh, precious lawyers, every second.
I called you for 15 minutes. You got the $200 on.
Stop it.
But anyway, so the reason why I reached out to him was because of a subject that came up on my podcast, which I have to tell you, I don't know the answer. I think I want to know the answer. And I'll pose it to our listeners here and viewers here. And I asked you guys on the break, and we kind of don't know. So I'm Joe Public. I come up to the sports book, and I bet, you know, $200 on the Super Bowl. I bet once a year. I win the money. I win the $200. I take my money, go home. That's it. I bet once a year. Do I have to pay tax on the $200 from the sports book?
Technically, I think you do. Practically speaking, I don't know that anyone does.
Well,
if it's just that,
there's no ID given for the $200, so who would even know you bet it?
Right. Sports, but here's the distinction: sports betting is different than the other casino games, right?
Okay, that's what I want to ask. Now, that's the real question came up on the casino. You go in the casino, you get rated. Here's your rating card. You get rated.
Yeah.
You only come in a couple times a year.
Yep.
And it just so happens that you win $200 here, $500 here, you lose $500 here. At the end of the five trips that you in 1 year, you're up $500. Do you have to? No tax form has been generated. Do you have to pay tax on that? You have to remember, oh, I won that $500 after those five trips. You have to write down and remember you won $500 and pay tax on that money. Not like a slot machine where if you hit $1,200 or more, a tax form is generated.
That's correct, automatically.
Does that mean if you win $800 on a slot machine and, you know, I know the way I do it. I pay a quarterly estimated tax and I get my win-loss statements from all the casinos at the end of the year. You write off your losses against your wins.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about for Joe Public comes in five times a year or bets that one Super Bowl bet per year. I'm going to ask, Rose that.
Yeah. And again, hopefully he doesn't bill you. But I will just tell you from the sports betting side of things.
Yes.
Right? Because I can speak to that. Let's say you won six figures. They still don't generate a tax form. They do it internally, right?
Yes.
It is up to you to do your taxes, right? So technically, the answer to it is yes, you should pay
even for those little amounts.
Well, that's
a couple $100.
I don't know that.
Because then
that
why wouldn't you get a tax form all the time at a slot machine? You know what I mean? Like, it's a very interesting question. Let me just tell you now. I didn't talk about it for years. It does involve DraftKings, and they paid me a lot of money on. I'll just tell you, they paid me $115,000 on Banchero when he won. So I got $115,000. I never showed the tickets on Twitter. I didn't do that.
You showed me.
I showed you.
Yeah.
Okay. So. At the end of the year, I looked on DraftKings. It's so great that they do this, that they don't make you send something in. You have to get something via mail or email. You go around the site. And by the way, it's not only DraftKings. It's most of the sports books.
Yeah.
And you go around the site, and they show you what you've won for the year. And you take that against your win losses off other casinos, and you write them off. You know, it's real simple. But I don't know if they turn that money in and say, hey, Bill Krakenberger won $115,000. Well, it was actually more. I won like $180,000 for the year. He won $180,000 off us for the year off us. So here's the you know, just letting the government know, because I didn't get any tax form on it. So I don't know the rule, and I just think that
what you're really most curious about, it seems like, is there a minimum?
Well, then, of course. I'm just saying what DraftKings did. They made it more easier for
people. No, but I'm saying for the broader question,
I want to know about Joe Public comes in and wins. Listen, I want to use the same thing again. Wins $200 once a year, comes in on the Super Bowl, walks away from the counter with $200.
Right. Well, let's make it even less. What you're really asking is if somebody nets $20, let's say, for the whole year.
20 grocery dollars.
Is it technically that legally binding, that really what they should do is fill out a tax form for that $20. That's what you're really asking.
I
want to
say
asking.
No way.
I want to say no way, too.
I want to say no way.
But you know what we want to say has no bearing on this.
By the way, for those interested, the IRS actually has an extremely detailed part of their website on the on some of this stuff. I've just been kind of scrolling through it, including the triggers and when you're supposed to get a form.
Okay.
Because $1,200, we've talked about that with video poker. That's from bingo or slot machines. $1,500 or more from Keno. $5,000 or more from poker. This one is a little confusing. $600 or more, or at least 300 times the amount of the wager. So I guess if you hit a 300-to-1 shot or more, you're supposed
get a form. 300-to-1 gets you a form. Yes, 300-to-1 is the odds that get you a form.
And then the all encompassing answer to all of these questions is that basically you're supposed to figure out at the end of the year on everything that you win.
Yes,
well, you can also deduct losses losses.
So now that's the thing. So some people will, because I know there's got to be a percentage of the audience out there that's saying this. Yeah, but the deductions are not treated in the same way that the winnings are.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm shocked at something he just said. Did you say at poker, sitting down at a poker table?
That's what it has on this website.
So is that IRS.org?
On this website.
On this website.
it was I'm on efile.com.
Yeah.
It was the IRS site sent
me. So poker, that's a great thing, because if you're a winning poker player, there's no way to track that. You know, I guess you could track it if you're cashing out chips here and there, but I mean,
it's a good point. If you're doing a daily grind poker player, are they busting out the black book at the end of the night? Like, all right, minus.
Well, the better part of that is up to 5,000. So in other words, if you win 4,000, they're saying you don't have to pay tax on it. What's the difference with winning here at the casino?
Now that's when you get the form. You're still supposed to pay your own taxes.
You're still supposed to pay your own taxes. Okay, that reminds me of a famous Ralph Kramden honeymooner scene when he won literally an all-night poker game. He won $80, and he got so nervous he went down and filed taxes on the $80, and he won a horse with his clock in his stomach, and he won it. And meanwhile, they summoned him to come down there, but they said, you have to come down. He got nervous all night, biting his fingernails, telling his wife, Alice, what am I going to do here? And sure enough, He just forgot to sign the tax form. They didn't want to know about the extra 80. He goes, no, let me tell you about the $80 I won, too. I want to give you tax on the all-night poker game. So I'll tell you what. I guarantee you, Twitter, we're going to get tweets on this.
It's a very timely discussion with April 15th just around the corner.
Yeah, people are going to want to know. And I'll say it again. I don't think anyone is voluntarily paying taxes on a couple $100 win or a $500 win. On a poker win, I can't even get a poker player to wash their hands in the bathroom. You think they're going to be paying tax on the slot win on a poker win?
And I just got a text from someone I won't mention who it is because I don't know that he wants to be named. He says, you are correct, Gil. There is no floor on gambling income. The IRS leaves it up to the taxpayer to report. There is no way to investigate and prove your winnings.
Very nice of him. Yeah. So tonight we're getting together with a little Las Vegas Chris Gambling Lou. I want to give the shout out to those guys. Chris going through some stuff there. So give a shout out to him and little get together.
He's been live texting us as well.
Good.
With his thoughts on slots as well.
Awesome.
Best to Chris. We've done all we can do. Golics are next. Gojo and Golic right here on the DraftKings Network. Or on VSiN, I should say, specifically. Pardon me. Got my networks mixed up. That's next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.